Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Everyone, I am Vicki Dobbs, your host here on Kindred Spirits, coming to you live. I'm the founder of Wisdom Evolution and head cheerleader for the You First Revolution, encouraging you to put you at the top of your priority list, to choose you first, hashtag you matter. Please pop on over to my website at VickiDobbs.com, that's VickiDobbs.com. To find out more about the programs I offer and sign up for my Friday Food for Thought newsletter, I'd love to have you join our circle of support. Choosing you first is not a selfish act. It is an act of self-preservation that allows you to gift the world with the best of you, not just what is left of you. And today I'm excited to introduce you to my guest, Nicholas Pearson. He's been immersed in all aspects of the mineral kingdom, our wonderful stone teachers, for nearly 30 years. He's one of the leading voices in crystal healing today and offers a very unique blend of science and spirituality alongside a grounded, practical approach to working with crystals. He's the author of several books, including the one we're going to talk about today, Crystal Basics, a pocket encyclopedia. And let's get started. I'm excited to learn more about crystals and how to use them, find them, select just the right ones for ourselves, and real-life tips and techniques to harness the power of these magnificent rocks and gems to transform our own lives. Welcome, Nicholas.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
How did you get into this amazing work?
You know, I have been a rock and mineral collector for just about 30 years now. I was the kind of little kid who picked up rocks everywhere, and my grandfather clearly observed this happening time and time again, no matter where we went, and he gifted me with my very first proper mineral specimen, a piece of beautiful quartz from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and, I mean, the rest is history. I was just so in love with the kind of magic and myth associated with crystals. I loved that this seemingly inert piece of the landscape was now transfigured into something luminous and with all those beautiful regular angles and faces. There's something magical to it. So, you know, here I am 29 years after getting that very first crystal, and I'm still learning, still growing, still communing every single day.
Oh, I love that. Rocks follow me home everywhere I go. I think it's one of those things, you're either magnetized by them or you don't even see them. So I'm right there with you. And why did you write this particular book?
Well, I started working on the Pocket Encyclopedia for a few reasons. I mean, first and foremost, when Crystal Basics came out in 2020, I wanted to make this like all-in-one kind of manual, part how-to, part reference, part theory, just to make it a really comprehensive kind of book. And I got two related pieces of feedback that both centered on how comprehensive it was. One, this is great. I wish there were more crystals in it. And two, it's wonderful, but it's so heavy. So I thought, maybe I can accomplish something that caters to both of these, that makes something more portable but has a little bit more depth of coverage in it. And that's how the idea for the Pocket Encyclopedia was born.
That's very cool. And I love the size. It's one of those things that if you're off hiking, you can pop it in your backpack. If you're in the car, taking a drive, or just headed somewhere, it's easy to drop into your purse, and love the color in it. And I even found some interesting facts. Like, I know there were different varieties of jade, but I had no idea there were 7 different colors of it. And just things like that that pop out and really make this a fascinating little book. And I know that one of the things that I really enjoy is that under each stone or crystal that you list, you give a very brief synopsis of how we can use them for not just physical healing, but psychological healing and spiritual healing. And I think that's really important because they are different energies. So could you share a bit about the difference in these 3 aspects of healing and what some of the fundamental functions are that we can employ in using all of these crystals and different varieties for our own healing?
Well, sure. You know, at the end of the day, to understand how crystals work, we have to know what they're made out of, how they're formed, what is happening at their most fundamental level. And the thing that makes a crystal, is the way its little bits, the little atoms, ions, and molecules, are arranged in this perfectly symmetrical and repeating structure. That's what we call a crystal lattice. And forms that are so regular, so rhythmic, so perfect and precise, have similarly perfect and precise energy fields. So we are anything but that. We are very incoherent at a physical level because, you know, if we think about it, the function of our liver and our brain and our lungs and our kidneys, it's all very different. So they've got to have different makeups. They've got to have different functions. They've got different cycles and rhythms to them. And therefore, the energy fields they produce, the kind of signatures in the vibratory level they generate are all going to be a little bit different. And so we're made up of this constantly changing field of energy. Crystals, on the other hand, are only ever this one signature, and they know it inside and out. They broadcast it inside and out, and they just have this level of, you know, we'll say vibratory perfection. So when we introduce something that is so regular and coherent into our otherwise sometimes jumbled energy field, we learn to be a little bit more orderly, a little bit more sound, and we'll say symmetrical on that same kind of vibratory pattern. And so crystals help us come into this state that we refer to as coherence, which describes the kind of parts and pieces of us, physical, energetic, psychological, spiritual, and otherwise, kind of marching in step, all synchronizing. So however it is that we're seeking to manifest the healing, the transformative qualities of a crystal, whether that's at the material level, whether that's at the mental level, whether that's at the, you know, broadly metaphysical and spiritual level, it's still kind of hinging on this idea of coherence, of the inner and outer order, and helping us learn to become a little bit more energetically ordered ourselves.
So when we tune into a specific stone, we have the ability to match their vibration, to, in essence, maybe slow our own selves down so that we can feel more, hear more, be more present in our lives?
In a way. It's not necessarily slowing down so much as we would call this process entrainment. And to you know, illustrate entrainment well enough, what we would see, you know, maybe if you had 2 old school pendulum clocks on the same wall, they were slightly out of sync to start with. Over time, those pendulums would begin swinging in perfect order because their rhythms would sync up naturally. One is not inherently faster or slower than the other. They're on enharmonic frequencies. And so they want to come into a state of order. You know, a similar example that we could use from music, if you, you know, sit in front of a piano and you hit the pedal that lifts the damper from all of the keys and you sing or play any note that you want to, all of the strings inside that piano that are enharmonic are going to begin to vibrate or resonate with that. So it's about kind of evoking that enharmonic state of order from within. That might manifest as slowing down. That might manifest as speeding up, just depending on what we need in our lives.
Right, like a drum circle where it gets a little chaotic in the beginning and suddenly the beat for everybody, whether it's 2 or 20 in a circle, lines up with each other, that entrainment.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's a great way to put that. So what makes crystals so effective at healing?
It comes back to the same concept of entrainment, this innate order that demonstrates what being harmonious, being synchronized looks like. We've got, a lot of data-driven studies that demonstrate a relationship between coherence and the electromagnetic field of the human being and the state of health, however we want to define that or measure that depending on the parameters of the study. And, the biggest relationship for that state of coherence that seems to matter is when our heart and our brain waves match up, when they're in sync with one another. So, if that is happening on one level, the level we can measure with, electromagnetism, we can suspect that the subtle energies, the energies we have no system or technology to measure yet, have to behave by certain similar rules. So when we bring in this very coherent transmitter, this electromagnetic oscillator in terms of the crystal, to our own energy field, and we begin to match that state of coherence, then it starts to kind of step down from the most subtle energetic level into the more material, and we get to this place where energy may or may not transcend pathology to get us into that state of wholeness.
Oh, so that's basically how these essential functions affect us is on a vibratory level. How does that differ, or is it the same if we're looking at color or a clear crystal like a quartz versus a more solid appearing stone like a malachite, for example?
Well, when it comes to color, if we look at the physics behind color in the mineral kingdom, color is only going to account for a very small percentage of a crystal's color. I had a teacher, friend, mentor in the world of crystal healing who quantified it as about 1/14 of a crystal's energy is determined by its color. So that's, give or take, about 7%, which means that about 93% of what a crystal does has no relationship directly to its color. We have to look at things like its chemical composition, its crystal structure, what kind of geometry is at play in the way its components come together, what process birthed it, where in the world was it, what kinds of trace minerals or elements might be inside or outside or alongside it. So those are the things that become the kind of primary drivers of what a crystal does. And color is a really valuable tool on the human level because we psychologize color. We develop attachment and meaning to color. And some of that is personal. Some of it is conditioned culturally. But we have to recognize that there is not always an objective and universal interpretation to color. There are trends that we tend to follow. There are rules that we tend to, we'll say, mutually agree upon. But if I show you a lime green gemstone and I tell you this is going to change your life for the better, you just hate the color lime green, there's a chance the color's not going to do it for you. Maybe something else about the stone will, but it's probably not going to be the color.
Right, right. I'm right there with you. I tend to be attracted to the watercolors, and it's interesting when you say lime green, I instantly have this, oh, okay, but I can't even think of a stone that would be lime green. So how do we build relationships with our stones, and why should we do this? I mean, it's not just about I like this and the book says it'll help me with this and okay, I'll set it over here, but really build a relationship with our stones and crystals.
Yeah, this is the magic question right here. Of all the things that we can do with them, what all the different techniques we might employ crystals for in our lives, they're almost meaningless unless they are predicated upon building relationship. So how we do that could be very subtle, could be very simple. We could just hold space for them. We don't have to call it formal meditation if we're not a formal meditator. Maybe it's an appreciation of that crystal optically and visually. Maybe it's a kind of emotional awareness of what it brings to the table and being mindful and grateful for that rather than just treating it as a kind of inert tool that you're going to use to make your life better. We don't really use crystals. We collaborate with them. We partner with them. And the subtle shifts in mindset can make, you know, big changes to our practice. But some of the simple techniques that I encourage people to try are what I call crystal contemplations, especially for newbies. Sometimes the word meditate sounds a little too rigid or scary. So I call it a contemplation, and just find the best light you can in a place where you're not very likely to be disturbed, and ooh and ah over that crystal. Hold it up in the light. Watch how light bounces off the surface or moves through it or not, depending on the kind of stone you're holding. Get to know the textures of it with your fingertips. Feel the heft of it in your hand. See if you can create an image of it in your mind's eye. And as you begin to kind of build a lexicon, a database of what that stone is like in a very physical way. Oh, so, you know, this fluorite has angular square faces, and it's quite dense, and it is quite transparent, and it's got these colors in different zones. While your conscious mind is occupied with those things involving the materiality of a stone, then our subconscious mind, our superconscious mind, they're able to collaborate with the stone in a more esoteric kind of way. When we give ourselves that single-pointed focus and permission to play, you know, permission to just be present, then something else begins to happen on a kind of energetic level. And over time, as we do this, rather than trying to interpret what we feel, just observing, each time, you know, I pick up this fluorite and I feel a sense of centeredness or calm, or I pick up, you know, that piece of kyanite and, you know, I feel a sense of movement, whatever it might be. As we do this repeatedly, we start to notice how the personality, how the energy of the stones manifests in our lives. So that's a really valuable tool. You know, obviously, I write crystal books. I hope people will consult crystal books. But more important than that is being able to consult yourself. And the only way you can do that is with experience.
That's what I like about the Crystal Basics Pocket Encyclopedia. It isn't an overly wordy, get bogged down in the science of it, as much as it is an amazing reference for, you know, I was walking through this metaphysical store and I saw that, and I picked it up and I put it back down, and I'm wandering the store and I keep going back to that stone. And why is it that that particular one is calling me? And so, you know, to grab this wonderful little handy book and flip open, because I haven't got a clue what this is, but the sign on the box it's in says, find it in this book and realize, oh, that's why, because it's matching where I'm feeling or what I'm needing in that particular day. And in my random shopping moment, there was a connection. And I've learned when that happens, try as I am on a no-buying day to put it back and leave it. I can't get out of the store without it. And so sometimes the stones choose us.
Absolutely.
So when that happens, do you have a routine for bringing that stone into your world, a way of cleansing it from where it's been so that it's free to be with you or clear to be with you, and maybe some sort of little ritual or ceremony that you do to welcome it to your collection, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big proponent of personalizing our rituals. So what works for me doesn't have to be what works for everyone else. But I do think that whatever we choose needs to be appropriate for the tool that we're welcoming in. So, you know, there are so many different ways we can cleanse our crystal. Depending on the stone, you might use sunlight or moonlight or smoke or sound or running water or salt or any number of other things. But we have to be mindful that certain crystals will bleach in sun, like kunzite and amethyst and aquamarine. Others might be, really sensitive to the kind of dehydrating effects of salt. So like opal should never go in salt, for example. Others could be water soluble or otherwise damaged by water. So we just want to make sure that we're looking at the science here, just briefly to know what the hardness of something is and whether or not something is going to fade in the sun or be damaged by water or any other factors. But you've got lots of options for cleansing that are available to you. The ones that I go back to over and over again, the ones I'm most likely to use in my everyday life, include things like cleansing with smoke, because that's not going to damage any crystals that I'm working with. I also love using sound. I have a musical background, and I'm coming back to music. It's playing a bigger and bigger role in all the things that I do, but sound is great because it's sometimes very passive, and you can generate it organically. You don't need a fancy Tibetan singing bowl or jumbo gong or anything like that. You can use the voice. You can use your clapping hands. You can use whatever you got. And another one that I love, by far the one I use the most, is cleansing with the breath. And there are a few different kinds of techniques that we can use for this. But if we breathe in the right intentional way, we kind of focus the spiritual energy that allows us to interact with our crystals, but we can also generate a tiny ionic charge, and that little bit of electricity interacts with the crystals in a more physical kind of way. We don't always have the luxury of it being a full moon. We don't always have our fancy singing bowls with us or a dish of salt. We can't always, light a bundle of sage or cedar, but we always have our breath. And so it is the most universal tool in my practice.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a and what a simple, easy way to say, here I am and welcome is with, your own breath and inhaling that energy on your intake from the crystal and giving it back with your breath to the crystal from you. That's gorgeous. I've never thought about using breath. I've blown across crystals before, but it was giving something into that I wanted to listen back from. So I love that using breath to welcome a crystal into my world and, the gem friend, so to speak. And I'd never thought about using music. So thank you for that one. The traditional things we've read about, the salt and the full moon. And when we come back, we've got to take a break here in just a minute. One of the questions that popped into my mind is, why do people bury their crystals? And the absorption factor of the different energies that they're exposed to, and if those ways of clearing that you just talked about are good for when, you hear my stones taking on the negative energy of a house or a place or a person that it's been, and how do I clear that? We'll think on that question as we take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes and talk more with Nicholas about the wonderful world of crystals and stones.
It's time. Time for you. Sometimes we set aside our own wants and needs for others, and that's okay as long as you take care of yourself first. It's like putting the oxygen mask on yourself before your child. The same applies to life. But it is hard in such a busy world. But no worries. Vicki Dobbs' new book, Get Off the Shelf, helps you every step of the way. Everybody needs help, and here is yours. Get your copy of Vicki Dobbs' Get Off the Shelf at VickiDobbs.com, Amazon.com, or anywhere fine books are sold. Learning to tap into the evolution of your own wisdom is hard, but now there's a place you can go where you can find some resources to do just that. VickiDobbs.com. At VickiDobbs.com, not only can you get free resources to help you get connected to Source, but you can find out about Vicki's Sacred Wisdom Workshops, sign up for her blog, or buy her book. Don't pass up this opportunity to discover your evolution of self. Visit VickiDobbs.com. That's VickiDobbs.com. Life is a personal journey. Don't bury yourself under such a busy life that you set your own aside. Vicki Dobbs' new book, Get Off the Shelf, uses a blend of ancient wisdom, modern modalities, art and creativity, so you learn to choose you first, which gives the world the very best of you. not just what's left of you. So don't put your head in the sand, do something about it. When you realize you have lost yourself, buried in your busy life, then gift yourself a copy of Vicki Dobbs' Get Off the Shelf, available at your favorite book source and at VickiDobbs.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
And we're here live with Nicholas Pearson talking about Crystal Basics, his new little pocket encyclopedia. And I ended our session before the break talking about clearing negativity. I know one of the things that comes up in my world is, oh, I can't touch that. Somebody else held it. Or look how that clear crystal is turning dark. It's holding all this negative energy, and I've got to go bury it. How do you suggest people deal with those kinds of thoughts around our crystals and stones? And why do people bury their rocks?
Sure. So let's start with this first piece. Why do these kinds of thoughts emerge, or what can we do to maybe do some problem solving around them? And, you know, first and foremost, this idea that someone can contaminate your crystals by touching them is a strange one to me. When we start to look at the world through the lens of the electromagnetic spectrum, through the lens of physics, you start to realize that the human body generates these massive fields of energy which can be detectable from very, very, very far away. Someone's energy is touching your crystals long before their fingers ever make contact with it. And so if you only seem to think they contaminate it by touching it, then I think we have a little bit of a preconceived notion here. And, you know, ultimately, crystals have memory. They store records or memories of information, of energy fields, of experiences that happen around them, as well as in contact with them. So, you know, part of the impetus to cleanse our crystals is a response to this kind of natural storage capacity that crystals have. It's not a bad one. I mean, good spiritual hygiene, just like good physical hygiene, is important to our health and well-being. And part of how we do that is by cleansing the tools we work with, clearing the space in which we live. But crystals do not distinguish necessarily between a good energy and a bad energy that they store. They're just witnessing. They're just observing. It's like, you know, if you have a tape recorder going, it doesn't distinguish between good sounds and bad sounds. It just records sound. So crystals work in that way. Now, we want to cleanse because not every imprint that they take on is necessarily in alignment with our goals, our intentions, the end results that we want to see from these relationships. So regular cleansing helps us reset, come back to that crystal's home frequency, maybe reestablish what our goals might be. And then, you know, we kind of maintain that level of coherence, again, coming back to coherence, to do the work that we do. Now, why would someone bury their crystal? There are several streams of thought around the world that kind of teach that for objects or tools or other items that might be, I hate to use the word contaminated, but you know, maybe that's a good picture to have in our heads. Things that are kind of imprinted with something very pervasive. We can let the energy of the earth kind of do the cleansing for us. This is usually a very passive technique that takes time. I don't generally recommend burying crystals for several reasons. There are a lot of minerals that we can damage by doing this. You know, if you have a beautiful, lustrous crystal of selenite and you dig a hole in your backyard and plop it in and cover it back up, there's a good chance that crystal's never going to look the same. It's going to be stained. The edges are going to be abraded. If it rains, you know, the surfaces could be marred. Other stones, you know, might be water stable, but they could react to the acidity or alkalinity of the soil and change. And most importantly, you could forget where you bury them. So those are all things we've got to take into account when we think about cleansing our crystal. So I would use this only in, like, really drastic kind of situations. Seldom have I ever buried a crystal myself. generally, I come back to the same three techniques for cleansing that we talked about in the last segment, using smoke, sound, or breath, because they're so universal and they work in every circumstance.
And they will not in any physical way damage or alter the piece that's chosen you to partner with. So I think that's great. Thank you. And the burying part brings up a question. I moved to a new place several years ago, and I've struggled with it being quote unquote home after 40 years on a different piece of land. And when I was drifting through your book, one of the things that popped into my head was something that, oh golly, it's been probably 20 years ago, someone shared with me. They said, when you go to a new property, because I was a realtor for years, do you plant a crystal in each of the four corners facing away from the house to protect and energize, et cetera, the property? Is that something that you've encountered or that you've done, or used crystals in a way like that to create a grid, a layout, a safe space, a container for things?
Yeah, there are lots of techniques that we can do this for. It's actually the subject of the book that I'm writing right now is related to topics like this. So some people might choose to bury them outside of the, you know, four walls of the home. Other people place them in the corners inside the house. But, you know, when we think about it, the geosphere, the part of the earth that is solid rock, is the literal foundation for our whole lives. And one of the ways that we can interact with this larger energy in our lives and the influence it's got over every detail of our home life is to use crystals to kind of create this interface between us and the land we live on. And, you know, some people might choose clear quartz for this. I know that selenite on the four main walls is a popular option, as is black tourmaline in the four corners of the home. But you can kind of personalize the stones you're using to the needs of your own energetic environment, the health and well-being of your own kind of psychic sensitivities. One of my favorite exercises is actually looking for the rocks that are in the earth beneath you. So, for example, here I live in Central Florida. We have karst topography, which is made of limestone with water beneath us. And at the kind of central sacred space of our home, we have a beautiful fossiliferous limestone with little cavities of golden calcite crystals and lots of little fossils. And it's native to Florida. And that kind of serves as an anchor piece for the energy of my whole home. And then I've got, you know, smaller grids kind of set up all around.
Oh, that's very cool. I live in Central California, so basically I'm surrounded by it on top of granite. You know, I'm 2 hours from Yosemite, and you can see Mount Whitney from my house, and all this massive granite that I hadn't thought about actually tapping into how grounding and welcoming granite can be for me. So that's a good aha moment for me. And so just as a takeoff, if I'm when we come back from our break, and this is a fun question. So if I'm having a bad day, what's a good crystal for me to perhaps put in my pocket or set on my desk or wear around my neck and kind of change the energy of that bad day? We'll be back in just a minute to talk to Nicholas more about these amazing stone teachers and the value they can bring to our lives.
Life is a personal journey. Don't bury yourself under such a busy life that you set your own aside. Vicki Dobbs' new book, Get Off the Shelf, uses a blend of ancient wisdom, modern modalities, art and creativity, so you learn to choose you first, which gives the world the very best of you, not just what's left of you. So don't put your head in the sand, do something about it. When you realize you have lost yourself, buried in your busy life, then gift yourself a copy of Vicki Dobbs' Get Off the Shelf, available at your favorite book source and at VickiDobbs.com.
Learning to tap into the evolution of your own wisdom is hard, but now there's a place you can go where you can find some resources to do just that. VickiDobbs.com. At VickiDobbs.com, not only can you get free resources to help you get connected to Source, but you can find out about Vicki's Sacred Wisdom Workshops, sign up for her blog, or buy her book. Don't pass up this opportunity to discover your evolution of self. Visit VickiDobbs.com. That's VickiDobbs.com. It's time. Time for you. Sometimes we set aside our own wants and needs for others, and that's okay as long as you take care of yourself first. It's like putting the oxygen mask on yourself before your child. The same applies to life. But it is hard in such a busy world. But no worries. Vicki Dobbs' new book, Get Off the Shelf, helps you every step of the way. Everybody needs help, and here is yours. Get your copy of Vicki Dobbs' Get Off the Shelf at VickiDobbs.com, Amazon.com, or anywhere fine books are sold.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
And welcome back. This is Vicki Dobbs here with Nicholas Pearson having an amazing conversation about crystals and stones, those wonderful teachers that we can carry around with us in our lives to help us and learn. So, I'm having a bad day, Nicholas. What's a good stone for me to maybe carry in my pocket, wear around my neck, or set on my desk and hang out with?
Well, I want to preface this by saying that everybody's bad days are unique, and there's going to be no magic bullet that fixes them all. But that being said, there are a few things that I think are likely to have a really nice influence. One of my favorites to turn to on days like this is rhodonite. Rhodonite is like the big, cushy comforter that a loved one wraps around you when you just need that support, that emotional warmth, and it's very stabilizing, so it doesn't feel like that bad day is going to spiral out of control. Another one we might consider could be something like citrine, which infuses us with a certain amount of optimism, a certain amount of feeling like you got this, you can do this. I also am a really big fan of just good old-fashioned grounding stones, whatever that might look like for you. Maybe that's black tourmaline, maybe that's smoky quartz, maybe that's garnet. Something that's going to have a really stabilizing energy because it helps us have that, you know, like the feeling of our feet on solid ground so we can have a sense of agency to make change on a bad day.
That's very cool, and I love rhodonite. There's a feel to that I connect with, even if it's a polished stone. So I know you share about crystal elixirs and building grids, and do you have specific formulas or layouts, patterns, templates that you use for different purposes?
I do. I've got just a hint at them in the Pocket Encyclopedia. There's going to be an entire chapter on grids, entire chapter on layouts, entire chapter on crystal elixirs and the big version of Crystal Basics. A book that came out in 2020. So people can find lots of great ideas and inspirations in there. And I often treat things like that as, you know, the recipes in a cookbook. You don't always have to follow it religiously. It's about using the relationship you've got with the stones to create the relationship you need, to create the change that you need.
So, Are there stones that we are inherently drawn to versus finding your encyclopedia and then reading through it and going, oh, I need this one, and then going in search of it?
Yeah, you know, this is a really good topic. It's the idea of getting prescriptive with our crystals. And this is something I genuinely try to avoid in, you know, personal relationships. Interactions with humans, like, I don't want to lead them and tell them this is the stone you need, because I'm not them. I don't have the lifelong experience of what it's like to have their life story, their baggage, their potentials, their hopes and wishes and dreams. So, you know, I can try to give them my two cents, but I'm always going to encourage people to feel it out for themselves. And oftentimes we tend to see that the crystals we're drawn to tend to be the kind of medicine we need. But I'd also like to encourage people to pay attention to the opposite. What are the stones that you kind of recoil from, the ones that feel uncomfortable, the ones that you go, never again? Because those tend to have the greatest potential for healing. The crystals that we're just naturally drawn to are those that speak to us on a soul level of something that, you know, maybe signifies an inherent strength or inherent opportunity that we've got. But those that can feel more uncomfortable tend to represent the things outside of ourselves, the things we have yet to internalize, the goals and lessons that are still in front of us. And when we work with those less comfortable gems, we start to feel more comfortable in life in the long run.
That's very cool. Very much along the lines of you have to face the shadows. You can't run from them. That dark balancing the light, one without the other wouldn't exist.
Right.
Yeah, I've never thought about that before. That's really cool. And there are some stones that I've looked at and thought, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know that I felt it was a negative push away, but certainly no attraction whatsoever, like not for me today. And I've never thought about turning around and saying, why? What is it that I need to look at that I'm not, because I'm avoiding this? So that's a great aha moment for me. So what are some of the basic ways we might incorporate crystals into our lives?
You know, the simplest way is asking for help, whether that means that we hold it and contemplate it for a few moments, need it as a, you know, trusted friend, a beloved collaborator, a member of our own soul family, or maybe it's wearing them as jewelry, carrying them in a pocket, creating a grid, or whatever else we do, but it's got to come from that relational kind of perspective. Because when we switch over to, we'll say, the more consumerist voice, which is, this is an object, this is a tool, I will buy it and it's going to make things better, we lose a lot of the magic. So however you want to incorporate crystals into your life, just be mindful about it, and that's where you're going to get the real magic.
Do some people just start with decoration? They're attracted to this, and I think that'd be pretty on my shelf. When ultimately, there's a connection there that maybe they're in a different space to hear, but they will in the future, and so that stone has reached out and say, hey, put me on my shelf. I got stuff to teach you when you're ready.
Yeah, and this is not a new phenomenon. You know, think about trends in jewelry, trends in building materials, trends in ornamental objects over the eons. This is something humans have done since the beginning of time. Whether we come to something for it being a useful building tool, a beautiful object of art, a lovely color that we want to accent our eyes as we wear it in jewelry, those are all doorways in. And I think as someone in, spiritual spaces, it is my job to celebrate every doorway in, no matter what it looks like, not to, you know, make people feel less than because they're only buying this because it's beautiful or because it's just their favorite color. Buy the things that make you feel good. Buy the tools that bring you joy in your life. The world is a complex place. Anything we can do to find a little bit more joy is worth doing, within reason, of course. So, you know, if that's all we have space for, if we're not interested in, you know, this crystal is going to fix such and such problem in our lives, it's just, I love the way this looks and I can't live without it, go for it.
Oh, that's beautifully said. It got goosebumpy moment there for a second. And if we move on and folks are thinking about, okay, I've never had a crystal, but suddenly I'm hearing this amazing conversation about all the things that I can have or do or be present with. What might be some essential crystals that you would suggest someone put in their, for lack of a better word, their healing toolkit or their inspirational box or their on their favorite shelf?
So, you know, I think it's important that we start with what we love and try to build a well-rounded toolbox from that. So, you know, look for the really multidimensional tools, things like all members of the quartz family. Look for some grounding stones. Look for those that make you feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. And those are the first places to start. And then as your toolbox grows, you can look for more unusual things, or maybe you want to try to paint with the whole color palette and make sure you've got all the colors represented. But you know, start with what you love, because that's going to encourage you to do the work.
That's very cool. And when we come back from our next break, we'll talk some more about maybe what some of the essential crystals are to have on hand if you want to connect with these wonderful stone teachers and bring them into your lives in a much more aware manner and friends, make friends with them, have new friends in your home. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with Nicholas Pearson.
Learning to tap into the evolution of your own wisdom is hard, but now there's a place you can go where you can find some resources to do just that. VickiDobbs.com. At VickiDobbs.com, not only can you get free resources to help you get connected to Source, but you can find out about Vicki's Sacred Wisdom Workshops, sign up for her blog, or buy her book. Don't pass up this opportunity to discover your evolution of self. Visit VickiDobbs.com. That's VickiDobbs.com. It's time. Time for you. Sometimes we set aside our own wants and needs for others, and that's okay as long as you take care of yourself first. It's like putting the oxygen mask on yourself before your child. The same applies to life. But it is hard in such a busy world. But no worries. Vicki Dobbs' new book, Get Off the Shelf, helps you every step of the way. Everybody needs help, and here is yours. Get your copy of Vicki Dobbs' Get Off the Shelf at VickiDobbs.com, Amazon.com, or anywhere fine books are sold. Life is a personal journey. Don't bury yourself under such a busy life that you set your own aside. Vicki Dobbs' new book, Get Off the Shelf, uses a blend of ancient wisdom, modern modalities, art, and creativity so you learn to choose you first, which gives the world the very best of you, not just what's left of you. So don't put your head in the sand. Do something about it. When you realize you have lost yourself, buried in your busy life, then gift yourself a copy of Vicki Dobbs' Get Off the Shelf, available at your favorite book source and at VickiDobbs.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Vicki Dobbs here with Nicholas Pearson, and we're having a awesome conversation about crystals and stones. And Nicholas was just sharing with us some of maybe the essential crystals that he might suggest we start with if we want to build our own crystal family.
Yeah, so, you know, for starters, when we're doing personal work, there's no one-size-fits-all answer. I can't say everybody must have a piece of citrine or a piece of celestite or rose quartz. There are general trends that we can look at. We can see things that kind of affect, you know, broad strata of the human psyche. But at the end of the day, there's no single list we all have to run out and flock and get in our collections. So we might consider starting with things in the quartz family. Clear quartz is probably the most universal teacher, ally, healer, guide, and friend in the mineral realm. It does a little bit of everything, and it does it very well. Having a variety of pieces of clear quartz allows us to build easy grids and layouts without, you know, spending a lot of money either. You can get inexpensive tumbles and points that are just great additions to have some versatile tools in your toolbox. I think we can also look at something like amethyst, which is also multifaceted. We tend to associate it with things like meditation and psychic development. It has a sort of purifying effect on the psyche and spirit. And there's so much more to amethyst than meets the eye. So that's another really versatile tool that we can add to our collection. Other members of the quartz family like smoky quartz and citrine and rose quartz are good allies. We can look at things that are what we consider to be anhedral quartzes, things that don't form crystal pieces. like our agates and jaspers and carnelians and flint and, you know, lots and lots of other members, they're also going to be really well-rounded tools. I think it's imperative that we have good grounding stones in our toolbox. So maybe that's black tourmaline or shungite. Maybe that's a piece of your local granite or flint. Just making sure we've got something that can anchor us really well, because it's only by building a strong foundation can we climb to new heights. And having those kind of, we'll say, expansive crystals, things that, you know, some people might call high vibe or high frequency. Those terms are a little deceptive. They don't really describe the ins and outs of what crystals do, but those kind of expansive consciousness opening crystals can be really helpful tools as well. Maybe that's something like selenite or celestite. Maybe that's barite or phenakite. There's a long list of them. And, you know, kind of approaching things from building a well-balanced toolbox is a really good perspective to have.
How would you fit something like a Lemurian crystal into that family?
So Lemurian crystals are fundamentally clear quartz, so they're going to have all the same general properties of a clear quartz crystal. They come from, you know, unique mines, mostly in Brazil, but there are a few other pockets that have been found elsewhere in the world. And so they're clear quartz with a special personality. They're going to still accomplish what other quartzes do, but then they're going to have an extra layer to their personalities, if you will.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite to play with. I know you talked earlier about how to determine what a crystal does based on its composition and texture and color and that sort of thing. So if someone doesn't have a book that they go reference, that they've just connected with a stone, how might they determine what that specific stone is for them?
So, you know, what we can do with this, if we don't have a reference tool, and in today's world, there's always the internet. I can't account for the quality of information you're going to find there, but there's always something to start with. Before I ever look up what a crystal does, long before I open a book or, you know, Google something, I start with, how does this crystal feel to me? What emotions, images, impressions do I have when I spend time with this crystal? And we can't expect to get the whole story all at once. Because if you meet a human being for the first time and you spend 30 minutes with them, you cannot possibly know their entire lived experience, every wish, every goal, every intention they've ever had. So we have to remember that we only get the big picture by building that relationship over time. After I kind of get my initial findings, my initial impressions of what it's like to feel a crystal out, before I look up its properties somewhere else, the next thing I do is I look up its geology, because we can learn something about the energy signature by looking at its crystal system or what formation process it had, what ingredients are in it. And the Pocket Encyclopedia has some information about this. The Big Crystal Basics that came out in 2020 has a whole chapter on decoding crystals in this way. It goes through a lot of the most common elements on the periodic table and things like hardness and some optical properties. So you can kind of get an idea of what energies influence that relationship that you're going to feel. And then we start to compare our experiences, the geology of it, and what other people have to say. So after I go through those first two steps, then I'm interested to see what other authors, other healers, other teachers have to say about crystals. And I try to find the common thread. I come from the perspective of, what is the one thing underlying all these different experiences that's going to unite them?
That's really cool. It kind of gives you an opportunity to make your own mind up and then see how your impressions compare to other people's impressions and see if there's a universal commonality that you've discovered that fits what other people have as well. Very cool.
Exactly.
So if we're looking at a specific crystal and we've been attracted to it and it makes us feel good, do you have a way that you actually tune into a crystal? Do you have conversations with these stones? Are they
teachers? Do they answer questions for you? What might one that hasn't before? I guess my question is sort of multifaceted, but you understand. I don't know if I do.
So I would always steer people towards this crystal contemplation exercise that we talked about earlier. That is my first place that I send people to, because it gives us a concrete outer focus. If I tell people there's a consciousness inside this lump of rock and it's going to talk to you, some people look at me like I have several heads or other extra appendages. Other people are like, oh, yeah, totally, everything has a voice and I can hear it. And others might aspire toward the latter but not know how to get there. So that's not a really helpful first exercise to give people. So I start with the concrete and the reflective, and, you know, what can we find within ourselves? What does this crystal evoke from within when we hold it? And then I give them, you know, progressively more advanced exercises. So I have a handful of these kinds of meditations in the 2020 book, Crystal Basics. I've got fewer of them, obviously, in the pocket of Psychopedia because it is a quick reference guide. But there are all kinds of things that we can do, like imagine ourselves going inside the crystal and meeting its consciousness. We could try to draw in with the breath the energy of that stone, something that I call crystal breathing, which is a way to kind of incorporate on a very physical, visceral energy of that crystal.
Oh, wow. Well, boy, we got our signal to wrap up. And just real quickly, what's the happiest crystal you've ever worked with?
You know, these days, it's citrine. I can't get enough in my life.
Awesome. Thank you, Nicholas, so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge. It's been such a joy for me to leaf through and play with this pocket encyclopedia. And to just learn the fascinating things about these wonderful stones, and some I'd never heard of before. And please, everyone, check out Nicholas' website at www.luminouspearl, that's LuminousPearl.com, or on Facebook at The Luminous Pearl. And go get a copy of his book, Crystal Basics and the Pocket Encyclopedia. Between those two, you'll have all you need to get started building your crystal family. And remember to check out my website at VickiDobbs.com. Find me on social media at Vicki Dobbs on Facebook, author, or Vicki L. Dobbs, Instagram, Pinterest. There's always a free gift available when you sign up for my weekly Friday Food for Thoughts and other occasional bits of wit and wisdom. Keep an eye out on the horizon for my next book next year, Burnout to Bliss, The Shamanic Art of Choosing You First. This is Vicki Dobbs, founder of Wisdom Evolution and head cheerleader for the You First Revolution, reminding you that it's time for you to give yourself permission to be first in your world, to put you on your calendar and choose you first. You have a right to be happy, because hashtag you matter. Have a wonder-filled week traveling down happy trails till we meet again. And I'll chat with you all again next month. Thank you so much for joining Nicholas and I. You all have a wonderful week.